Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast post round two of the Sony Open. We are going to review everything we've seen through two rounds of this tournament and look forward to the weekend. And to do that, I'm bringing in my good friend, Greg Ducharme. Welcome to the show, sir.
Oh, well, I'm happy that you call me a good friend now. We've had a nice start to the relationship. It's a true honor, Rick. So I'm very happy to be here.
We've known each other for two whole weeks. I think I can say we're almost best friends at this point.
I think so. I mean, I don't like the almost being in there, but I love the friend word being thrown around. So I'm happy to be here.
I saw those slick new wedges you got, so I'm trying to buddy up. I'm trying to buddy up with you.
Yeah, now I get it. Now I get it. I do have some old SM7s that there are some bidders on in the Twitter sphere here. So those things are beautiful. I'll tell you because I'm so excited about it. The SM8s are out, and well, I shouldn't say that they're out, but they are out on the PGA Tour, and some very fortunate few like me have gotten theirs. And I actually went out to California a couple months ago or early December and was able to get fit. And during my fitting, this will make you really jealous. I had Bob Vokey and I had a couple other Vokey guys, one of which who actually makes and designs the wedges. He's like the scientist behind Vokey's. Vokey's kind of got an artistic design to him. And this guy is the scientist behind it. I had him, I had Vogue, and I had a fitter who's a full-time fitter out in Carlsbad out there. And the three of them all kind of watched me hit wedge shots separately, and they all agreed on all three of my wedge makeups. So I have a perfect fit, and it's they're slick. I'm so happy to have them.
I love that. And the confidence you get when you know something is built just for you is priceless. That's Carlsbad's, you know, my neck of the woods. I'm not too far. I might have to get down there and get fitted for some. I highly
recommend it. You have to get fit for your wedges. It's the most, shouldn't say the most, but it's probably top two most underrated, things in your bag to get wedges for, to get fit for rather. And when you're fit properly, it makes a huge difference. So super excited.
And Lord knows I need help from 100 yards and in, but all right, here we go. So let's do this. Those wedges are beautiful. What is not beautiful has been the weather we've seen in Honolulu this week. Sony Open, Cam Davis ranked number 310 in the world and Brendan Steele ranked number 403 in the world are sitting at the top of the leaderboard at 6 under par. And we were just talking about this before we kind of went hot. This leaderboard that we have at the Sony Open is so incredibly bunched up. Literally the cut line, Greg, one over, every single person who's going to play the weekend is within 7 shots of this.
And you got to figure, with the weather wet and windy still tomorrow, a little less windy, but definitely wet, and Sunday the wind kind of calms down a little bit, you got to figure there's low scores out there, especially on Sunday. So if you can stay within 5 or even 6 shots. I mean, you got to feel like you can make up some serious ground this weekend, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, one, you go low. So I think so much of this already through two rounds. Of course, these guys have had to have been really good, but I also think there is so much luck involved in a tournament like this. I mean, the AM/PM wave, I didn't see the final numbers on this, Greg, but I know it was playing like 2.5 shots more difficult if you teed off early on Thursday and in the afternoon on Friday. So like that alone, and then you get in these windy conditions where you catch a gust. You keep hearing these guys say they're getting gusted, right? So it's like there's so many factors that go into this, which I think then leads to the point of something crazy can happen. Somebody can come from 5 shots back or someone could run away with it. I think there is a lot of golf still to be played and it's kind of wide open.
When you look at some of the factors we have at play here, one, blustery conditions, that makes it, and you hear him talk about it on the telecast constantly, it makes it very difficult on the greens. And, you know, players are somewhat used to hitting balls in wind. It gets windy. A lot of these guys live in Florida where it's very windy. They you know, you have some Australians, some Texans in the field. There are players that are very accustomed to playing in the wind. But once you get onto the greens, that's when it really becomes a really difficult aspect of the game. We heard it last week. We heard it this week. Players getting gusted, and it really changes those 3 and 4 footers. And then you add into the mix this week the rain, and you're on greens that aren't brand new like they were at Kapalua. And all of a sudden those spike marks start to pick up a little bit, and you combine spike marks on really soft greens and wind, and it becomes extremely difficult to putt. And like you said, a little bit of luck involved. I look at a guy like Brendan Steele, who in the first 2 rounds has gained near 3.4 strokes gained putting, 3.35 strokes gained putting today. He leads the field in strokes gained putting. But, you know, is that something you think can be withstand? Is that sustainable?
Generally, no. What we've seen over the course of, you know, the strokes gained era is the strokes gained putting is the most volatile stat round to round, let alone week to week. And it is very difficult to post 2 rounds like he did, like you said, plus 3 or more on both of the first 2 rounds so far. Patrick Reed was able to keep it going to a playoff last week, and then it kind of dried up for him at the end. He wasn't able to finish it off and win the event, but like, it is possible. It is just extremely unlikely when, you know, he's only gaining 1.3 total through 2 rounds, tee to green. He's just doing all of his work with the putter, which tends to be a very difficult way to do this. I mean, Brendan Steele is interesting because this is not, you know, he might be confused. This is the Sony Open, not the Safeway Open, which is usually where we see him do right. All of his work, right?
And the other thing about him is this is a very atypical kind of statistical breakdown for Brendan Steele. He in 2019 was 176th in strokes gained putting, 15th in strokes gained off the tee. In 2020, it's much of the same. 143rd strokes gained putting, 79th off the tee, which being so early on, you've got to give him a break. But throughout his career, he's a pretty good driver of the golf ball. I would say an excellent driver of the golf ball. That's probably the reason why he's a tour player. The putting is not something that you would normally look for. So when you look at a player from a handicapping perspective, you look at a player like this, putting really well, not necessarily driving it well. His iron game's doing okay. Do you think, like, part of me almost thinks that, that a Brendan Steele can turn it around with the driver going into the weekend. And although he's been leaning on his putter in the first 2 rounds, maybe, if the weather changes a little bit for him, maybe he can get it going with the full swing.
Yeah, so this ends up turning into a really interesting like math problem or a puzzle. When you look at it and say, okay, for the average tour event, you probably need to gain 13 or 14 strokes to win it. Something like that, right? You know, yes, if this turns around where he starts to hit his driver like he normally does, or he starts to hit it at an elite level, and say for the next 2 rounds, he gains a stroke per round. But now his putter comes back down to earth for what we would expect. And now instead of gaining 3 per round, he's just gaining like a half a stroke per round. It's just like he's not going to be able to replace the production that he's already found on the greens in the first 2 rounds, even if his driver gets back to like kind of Rory elite levels, right? It just ends up being a very small sample size math problem that I have a feeling a lot of times does not equate to Brendan Steele winning the golf tournament.
And you brought up Patrick Reed earlier, how Patrick Reed was able to hang on after 2 rounds and get into a 3-way playoff. I look at Patrick Reed in a completely different light than a Brendan Steele, because Patrick Reed was playing to his strengths going into the tournament. Patrick Reed is an excellent short game player, has been his entire career, and an excellent putter. Patrick Reed is on a completely different level than someone like Brendan Steele. So I tend to agree with you here, where I don't know how confident I am in someone like Brendan Steele, especially when the leaderboard is so packed.
Yeah, so let's talk about the other guy at the top. So Cam Davis, number 310 in the world, younger guy, kind of really getting his first taste of PGA Tour action this year. We saw him wrap up the 2019 calendar year with a T3 at the Australian PGA Championship. He is an Aussie, so he's got a lot of experience kind of all over the world and on the Korn Ferry Tour. I was pretty impressed with his play. I mean, he very similarly did it in the same way that Brendan Steele has, which is, again, gaining a lot of strokes on the greens. But I don't know, seems really solid. A lot of these Aussies, we talked about it in a couple of days ago, probably Monday, you know, who are donating to, you know, all of the wildfires and whatnot. Like Cam Davis is one of those guys, and I was actually looking at the wrong guy. Cam Davis leads the field in strokes gained tee to green, and he's losing strokes putting. That's the combination
right.
I want.
I was going to bring that up. I mean, he's second in strokes gained off the tee, ninth in strokes gained approach. He just happens to be 98th in putting. So you look at it, this is why this tournament is so difficult to predict at this point, because you just take his name away from it, take his record away from it. A guy who's only made one cut so far this year on the PGA Tour during the wraparound season, it was like a tied 28th. He missed every other cut. I think he has 5 missed cuts this year already, and here he is as probably the guy hitting it better than anybody else in the field.
Yeah.
And on a golf course like this, you would think, well, this is the guy that he could probably get something going with the putter and make a real move over the weekend. But again, is this really a player that we expect? Do we expect Cameron Davis to be able to hang on against the likes of Webb Simpson and even guys like Keegan Bradley, and you got Sungjae Im back there. There's a number of really talented players back there. And the other Australian, Cameron Smith, is right there at 500 par as well.
Yeah. Cam Smith is lurking. I mean, this is the really interesting situation, Greg, where if you removed everybody's name and I looked at this and said, okay, the guy who's playing by far the best in the field from tee to green, the guy who is still losing strokes putting, which he's normally a pretty average putter, so that's good news. And you look at it, and he's 18-1, and he's currently tied for first. I'd be sprinting to the window to bet this. So, like, now I have to decide, does just the fact of lack of experience or the fact that it's Cameron Davis – is that what's going to stop me? Because everything else says this is setting up to be a great weekend for him.
Well, I gotta get your thoughts on this, because I know right now, if you're saying right now, if you're looking to take that 18-1 odds, you're thinking if and he does win, you're killing yourself if you don't do it. But at the same time, there's not really much evidence to say that he's going to do it, especially when you have a Sunday where the conditions will get a little bit more normal, and they should play, in my anticipation, fairly easy on Sunday. I think when the wind gets down to a 10-mile-an-hour wind and you have a really soft golf course from all the rain, I mean, you're going to expect to see some really low scores. So you look at a Cameron Davis who has very little experience on the PGA Tour, and not a guy who's used to really being in this scenario. It's hard for me to say Cameron Davis is the favorite here, despite his statistics.
Trust me. Yeah. I mean, I don't love it. Right. It's just one of these situations where if I removed his name, everything adds up, and I'd kind of argue, you know, these guys can't win until they can. Right. I mean, everyone's got to come up and win their first one.
It's a fair point.
These young guys are more ready now than they've ever been with the increased technology and metrics and everything we know. You know, we'll talk about Morikawa in a second. Like, these guys are jumping out and are ready to play on the biggest stages. And quite frankly, it's not like there's a bunch of other big names breathing down anybody's neck here. You know, JT misses the cut. Patrick Reed misses the cut. You mentioned Webb is lurking a handful of shots back. But, like, it's not like, you know, Tiger's out here running them down. It's not like it's a star-studded leaderboard.
You probably are going to be in a situation where Cameron Davis is as comfortable as he could be in playing in the final group tomorrow, playing with a guy like Brendan Steele. Not only is he not a huge name. It's not Tiger Woods. The crowds aren't going to be running out in front to try to see Tiger's ball. He's not going to have any of that to deal with. But Brendan Steele, he seems like an extremely nice guy. He seems very even keeled. It should be very comfortable for him, but I still look at a guy like Cameron Smith, who is a much more seasoned player on the PGA Tour. I look at a Keegan Bradley, who's a major champion. Even a Ryan Palmer is a guy who I really have my eye on going into the weekend. These guys are not necessarily going to intimidate you based on their name, but they are seasoned winners on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And I would be remiss if we didn't stop and pause on Morikawa for a second, because before I hop on my soapbox and describe my profound love for him, like, what did you think of Morikawa's round today specifically, where he went out and shot an even par 70?
Well, I mean, this is basically a round in difficult conditions where he got away with even par in a scenario where it didn't look very good, right? It started to slip away for a while. We're watching most of this tournament and he's hanging around, and you mentioned the names on top of the leaderboard, and Morikawa is looking like the favorite when he makes the turn at even par. And then he makes back-to-back bogeys on 14 and 15 with, I would say, an uncharacteristic tee shot on number 14. And then just kind of got himself out of position on 15 with his approach shot. But he showed I think he really showed who Colin Morikawa is on 17 and 18. The 17th hole, playing soft, it's a little bit easier, that Redan style hole. An excellent birdie there, he just flagged it. And then on 18, he took advantage of an easier par 5. I think that's the kind of round, that's the kind of finish that you look back on when you're holding the trophy and you say, hey, when I'm looking at this second victory on the PGA Tour, I look back to 17 and 18 on Friday night.
I was so impressed by this. You know, this kid got the wrong end of the draw in a big way. You know, the Thursday morning, Friday afternoon draw, like 2.5 shots worse, which you can look at the leaderboard and see. I mean, I'm just trying to, off the top of my head, the only guys in the top 10 that I think came from that wave were Morikawa and I think Sabatini was the only other one. The rest of these guys all finished up early on Friday, right? I don't see anybody else in here off the top of my head.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And so that even par round is big.
So the fact that he just gets, right, he gets the worst of it. He's one shot back. And to your point, Greg, I think there was a spot in this round it could have got away. It's windy conditions. It's grinding on everyone. He's missing fairways. He's trying to figure out how to hit recovery shots and how to make par. And there was a chance that this round gets away from him. And he's now 5 shots back, you know, going into tomorrow, and he's in 45th or whatever. But for him to finish birdie on 17, 18, and I think when he looks back at this and assesses it and says, okay, I got the worst end of it. I might not have had my best stuff today on Friday, but I'm one off the lead. And now, in the same thing, like, who am I chasing down? Brendan Steele and Cameron Smith, or Cameron Smith and Cameron Davis? Cool. I think I can do that.
I would say he's definitely licking his chops looking at this leaderboard. I found it very interesting in his interview, and you mentioned this about Cameron Davis and how these young guys are so ready to come out and play. And he was asked after the round, you know, where's your mental toughness come from? Did it come from when you were young? And the first thing that he mentioned was having a swing coach and a mental coach from a very young age. And he mentioned his coach, Rick Sesenhaus. And I found that very interesting. It's a new era where these kids are, when they're playing in the AJGA and they're playing wherever they're playing, they're not just learning how to play golf. They're not growing up like I did and probably like you did, where they're playing all kinds of different sports and they're just kids that are playing. These kids are training from an extremely young age and they're prepping their mind right from the start. They're getting PGA Tour level training when they're, you know, 10, 12, 15 years old. And that makes a huge difference. Yeah. In my opinion, and I think you're going to see a wave of young guys come out ready to go. The only interesting thing about that is, well, where can Colin Morikawa get? Where can Matthew Wolf get? Where can Victor Hovland, Joaquin Niemann, where can the young guys that we see now that are such a surprising wave, can they get to a level that makes the kids that are 15 now really struggle when they get out there? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I wonder how long. Yeah, that's a good point. Where when all of these guys become kind of the norm on the PGA Tour, like, then what happens, right? This will continue to evolve multiple times. It should be
right.
Pretty interesting.
We've seen it with distance, right? It's the same thing with distance, where all of a sudden John Daly's hitting at 300 yards and nobody can believe it. And then you turn around in 2020 and pretty much everybody's hitting 300 yards.
You have to, not like you have to.
Right. I mean, I guess have to is strong. You look of at a course. Guy like Zach Johnson, who's in the mix here, but Zach had struggled a little bit last year, and you get into this situation where Phil Mickelson, who is a fairly long hitter and has been his entire career, is going through a distance training program to try to keep up. And I think that the mental edge is the same thing. I think these kids are coming out ready to go because and this is, in my opinion, thanks to Tiger Woods and all that we've spoke about with Tiger's mind, they're training their minds to be like Tiger right now. And the level of mental fortitude, aptitude, whatever you want to say, is just continuing to increase.
Yeah, Morikawa sounded like he was 45 years old answering those questions after his round. Like
right.
he'd been on the PGA Tour for 2 decades and he knew exactly what was going on and everything was under control. It's super impressive stuff. Impressive stuff we did not see was Justin Thomas this week. The heavy favorite at the Safeway, winner last week at the Tournament of Champions in Maui, misses the cut and quite frankly never really threatened it. I don't know how much of his two rounds that you saw, Greg, but just never, I don't know how to describe it, just stuck in stall, in neutral for 2 days.
Well, you see, yesterday in round one, he got off to a tough start and making 3 bogeys in your first 5 holes is never easy. Now with the Justin Thomas, you would expect, hey, well, the leaders are only a couple under at the time JT's doing this. He can probably fight back, but the conditions proved to be a little bit of a challenge for him and things weren't going his way. And he did get in at 2 over on his first round, which was, I thought, a nice spot to be. I thought if you were kind of inside that 2 over number, you could make a move on Friday and get yourself right back into contention. But then on Friday today, we see him make 2 double bogeys. And the double bogey on number 2, which last year led the field in double bogeys, he hit it into the water off the tee. That hurts you, especially when you're trying to come from behind. You can't afford that. There are some players that have made some double bogeys near the top of the leaderboard that I think have a chance to win. But when you make a double bogey and you're 3 over pars or 2 over par going into the week, you're in real trouble. And then he made a double bogey on the 15th hole as well, where it was just an uncharacteristic shot. And I think that's something that is peculiar about Justin Thomas. Did it surprise you?
So I think, of course, yes, it did surprise me. To think that he was ever going to miss the cut would have been a very unlikely scenario. So, yes, it certainly surprised me, especially in the way that it came, which was a lot of big numbers. Now, I will say, because I already saw on Twitter, right, everyone wants to sound the alarm and be very concerned about Justin Thomas, which you shouldn't be. What I will say is he lost nearly 4.5 strokes putting in the first 2 days. Gained off the tee, gained on approaches. He was fine around the green, lost nearly 4.5 strokes putting, which would be the third worst tournament total that he's had in his last 53 tournaments, which is about 3.5 years. So the fact that he lost that many over 2 rounds, compared to, you know, some of his worst 4 round totals, it was a historically bad putting performance for Justin Thomas while the rest of his game was really, really good. So I chalk this up to say, yes, it is very surprising, but it looks to me like an extreme outlier situation. And whenever JT decides to tee it up again, you know, I'm running him back out there in all of my lineups, and I think he has just as good of a chance to win as I did 2 days ago.
I don't think this is something to sound the alarm. I think to sound the alarms on Justin Thomas right now,
it would be insane.
It would be insane. You got to look at what's going on out here. You have blustery winds, 25 to 35 miles an hour. You got rain. You got the greens are chewed up. There are so many, and these aren't excuses. These are just facts of matter. And the thing is, in conditions like this, it does make it more difficult. Yes, it is still playable. You can still get to a number like 6 under par. You can still play great rounds of golf, but the variables just increase. So when you're a player like Justin Thomas, who's one of the best players in the world, playing in a vacuum is a place where you're going to do really, really well. And all of your strengths are going to show and your probably going to be right near the top of the leaderboard with all the other stars in the game. When the conditions get really, really bad, it opens up the field. We're seeing that with the leaderboard that we see now. The edge that Justin Thomas has is limited in conditions like this because there's just that extra variable. There's that element of luck that is just simply increased in a week like this. And you just start getting the bad breaks and it gets into your mind a little bit. You get a little frustrated. You get a little bit out of sync. And your attitude starts to change. Whereas last week he's saying, I knew that I was meant to be here. For some reason, I was meant to win this tournament. Yeah. Well, this week it just went the opposite way.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, but you know, that's the world we live in where everyone on in the Twitter sphere wants to, you know, blow up JT. But here's what we're going to do. I want to get some of your thoughts on some non-Sony storylines and we're going to take a quick break. But before we do that, can I tell you a Cam Davis story?
Yes, please.
Okay, because it's rare that I have, first of all, the fact that I have a Cam Davis
story. Well, it's rare that anybody does.
is like shocking enough, so I feel like I have to say it here. So, a few weeks ago, I was on the DraftKings YouTube channel and we did a season-long PGA draft where we went through, it's based on how much money they earn. We drafted 10 golfers each. And one of the quirks that they had was a computer, a random number generator. And when it was the computer's turn to pick, it would randomly pick a number. And whatever that number was, it would take that golfer in their official world golf rankings. So it's like it just adds chaos to it, right? Like that's the whole point.
Yeah.
So the computer has like the third overall pick. So it comes up, you know, JT's off the board, John Rahm's off the board. Like any person is taking, you know, Rory here or whatever, Brooks, whoever it ends up being. And the computer randomly generates Cam Davis. And for the last like 4 weeks, we've just been shredding this and being like, oh my gosh, the computer, like no chance in the world, blah, blah, blah. So it would only be fitting if this guy snaps off a win, like week one, you know, first full field event of the year, Cam Davis wins this thing and the computer, they might as well, you know, robots might as well be taking over at that point.
They're taking over the world. They know something we don't. You can't make it up. I mean, that just, it just strengthens the opinion. Hey, Cam Davis is hitting it great and the computer knew it and we didn't.
So it's hilarious because I was like I saw he was like one under yesterday, you know, Thursday. I was like, ha, that's funny. Like I'm sure he'll drop out of this thing. He's like,
yeah.
He's three. I'm like, oh God, he's actually going to run up and win this thing. I thought that was fun. So we'll see if he can keep it going for two more rounds because one win would be plenty of value for the computer for the entire year.
We'll have our eye on Cam Davis this week.
All right, cool. So let's take a break and hear a word from our partners.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back. All right, Greg. A couple of things before we sign off here. Because the Patrick Reed, you know, cheater story, never seems to stop rolling. And, you know, the new story that just breaks is Patrick Reed's lawyer sending Brandel Chambly a cease and desist for calling Patrick Reed a quote cheater. You know, we've talked a lot about this, right? And we kind of talked about just saying you're wrong. Or, you know, just being a little self-deprecating goes a long way. And I just don't think, like, we live in 2020, which is a world where when you double down and triple down on things like this, it just makes it worse. And I just feel like Patrick Reed continues to double down and triple down.
This is, I, you can hear my energy level go down here because this is just disappointing to me. It's disappointing to me that we have to continue to talk about
this. I don't be about this.
This story is just, I mean, I wish he didn't do what he did. I don't care if it was an accident or not. I don't care if he's a cheater. And I wish it didn't happen because it tainted that event in some way. It changed the storyline for the President's Cup. I wish it didn't happen. I wish we didn't have to deal with this. This isn't what we should be talking about in the game of golf. Yet we have to, and it just won't go away. And I look at this situation. I look at Patrick Reed lawyering up, and I understand it. I mean, you don't want somebody calling you a cheater, especially if you're in his shoes and you don't feel like you cheated. Whether we agree with that or not, if you just put yourself in Patrick Reed's shoes, let's just say that he's telling the absolute truth from his perspective,
mm-hmm.
hypothetically, and he didn't cheat, and it was an accident, and he saw it, and he's in his mind doing the right thing, and you have somebody sitting there on Golf Central calling you a cheater, you'd be upset. You're dealing with what you're dealing with at the President's Cup. You're dealing with all this. It's all anybody can talk about, and you feel like you didn't do anything wrong. Well, maybe it's not a bad idea to lawyer up. I mean, what else are you going to do? So now that doesn't have anything to do with my opinion on it. It's just, right. It's simply, hey, like there is a shadow of a doubt, and I do believe in innocent until proven guilty. And this is just one of those situations. This is why I wish we didn't have to talk about it, because it's impossible to prove. We'll never be able to prove it. So right. It's difficult. Now, on the other side of it, if you're Brandel Chambly, his job is to analyze situations. One of the things he's supposed to do is be critical when he feels it's necessary to be critical. He's supposed to give his opinion, and it's supposed to be honest, and he's not supposed to sugarcoat things. So I understand why he uses the strong language he does, because that's what the videotape looks like. So this is just a difficult situation on both sides.
It's strange because we live in a news cycle world where every time something new, like it just restarts the news cycle. So now we have to talk about this Patrick Reed thing again, where there's so much other stuff going on in the world of golf that like we could have forgotten about this 7 times already. Like the Friday at the Hero World Challenge, if he takes his 2-shot penalty and he says, holy crap, that camera angle looks really bad. It didn't look like that from my angle, but whew, man, that was bad. I take my 2 shots. Let's all move on with this. Like I feel like we never would have heard another word about this.
It's just hard to say because it didn't happen that way.
Right.
But you mentioned the time, you mentioned the stories in the game of golf. I think the timing of this, it could not have happened at a worse time because it's in December and there's only one event where there's only 24 guys in the world playing, and he's one of them. So that is going to take a major storyline. It happened to take a storyline in an event where Tiger Woods is cashing in and playing great.
Yeah.
So, that should be the story of the President's Cup. It should be Tiger Woods. It should be Justin Thomas and Abraham Ancer and Ernie Els and all the things that he did. But it's just not, because we have to cling to these stories, and it's just an unfortunate, difficult situation. And honestly, in this lawyering up thing here from Patrick Reed, the cease and desist, I can't say that anybody's right or wrong. I mean, it's just frustrating to me.
So here's two quick things on this. So you mentioned timing. What I thought was so interesting is this article from Golf Week, who was it? Iman Lynch.
Yeah.
They mentioned that this letter was sent basically day 2 of the President's Cup while those guys were over there in Australia. And to me, I'm thinking, okay, all that's going on, he's trying to play golf. He's probably calling back to New York where his lawyer's located, and they're hammering this thing out. Like, of course he was like 0-3 before, you know, as this thing got going. He was probably completely distracted out there.
So I got a question about this. Patrick Reed seems like the guy that when I watch him, when I listen to him in interviews, the way that he's handled this, from my perspective, is he lives almost like he lives under a rock. Like, he doesn't care about any of this. Like, he's not listening to it. He has no idea what everybody's talking about. And he's just kind of going about his own business, which is great for playing golf. But then you hear this story, And now it's like, is Patrick Reed, does he have a little sensitive side, or is this just I mean, it's impossible to completely ignore this, but he made it seem like he did.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Everything he has said publicly is, oh, you know, I didn't hear that guy yell. I didn't hear anything. The Australian fans were just fine. It doesn't bother me at all. And then, yeah, this stuff comes out. So, all right, here's what we'll do. Will we have to talk about this again? That's my next thing. Will this evolve another time and we'll have to come back on here and talk about it, or do you think we're done?
I'm going to go optimist here. I'm going to be optimistic. I'm feeling good today. I'm all excited up here at 11:30 on the East Coast on Friday night. I think it's done. I think there may be a little bit, this might linger on a little bit, but I think this story is done.
Okay. I hope you're right. At least done until Winged Foot when those fans get a hold of him. But, that's going to be ugly. Let's end this on a more, not a somber note, because this is more, I think, celebratory. We lost Pete Dye, passed away at the age of 94, who, the contributions to the game of golf that Pete Dye has contributed are, it would take me too long to list them all. He's one of the best ever. 2008 World Golf Hall of Fame inductor. He was the fifth architect to be inducted. His courses, just a laundry list of major events of all kinds being held there. How will you remember Pete Dye in the game of golf?
Well, you look at the kind of ages of golf course architecture, which I am a big fan of golf course architecture. And you look at the guys like, you set these guys aside, the A.W. Tillinghast, the Alistair McKenzie, the Donald Ross, these kind of guys that are in that older generation. You put those guys aside. You look at the guys that we have now, and Pete Dye is really, he's the father of these guys, the Reese Jones, the Gil Hans, Coren Crenshaw, all these great architects that we see now, and they really all looked up to Pete Dye. You heard Jack Nicklaus talk about how he looked up to Pete Dye. Tiger Woods posted a tweet saying how when he wanted to get into this business, one of the guys he was calling was a Pete Dye. And whether you like his golf courses or not, it is really irrelevant. You look at the number of golf courses he designed, and it's quite shocking. I mean, go to dyedesigns.com and look at the courses, and it's incredible. And it's worldwide. So that is one thing that really amazes me. I worked at a course called Medalist Golf Club, which is fairly well known on the PGA. There are a number of PGA Tour players that are there.
Yeah, of course.
During my time there, they did a restoration. And this is a Pete Dye golf course. It's a Pete Dye and a Greg Norman. And there have been, since the original design, there have been a number of hands on it, and they made little tweaks here and there, but it definitely has a Pete Dye feel to it. And I learned to love the golf course. It took me a little while. It took me some experience playing it to really appreciate it. But the coolest thing to me, and I'm reminded of this today, was Bobby Weed, who came in and did the restoration while I was there. And this restoration is one that I think will really last. I think they're going to settle down with the changes that they make there because it's so good. It was so well received. And this was at a time when the golf course, towards the springtime, they basically blew it up in the spring. And right before it was playing the best it's ever played. It was in perfect condition, and they were going to basically spray a chemical, kill all the grass, redo. They blew up the entire golf course, basically, except for the rounding and all that. They did a major restoration, and some of the people there were like, are we really going to do this now? It's in such good shape. And Bobby Weed came in and did a masterful job. And the next year when I went back, everybody was in love with it. And what it speaks to me in a couple ways. One is, well, Pete Dye was not just a golf course architect, but a mentor. And he taught guys like Bobby Weed, guys like Bill Corr and many others, how to design golf courses. So not only do we get to play Pete Dye golf courses for years to come, but his disciples, the guys that he taught are going to be able to extend that on down the line. It's a beautiful thing to me.
That to me, first of all, I think that was, you could not have, given a better tribute there. I completely agree. My big takeaway from this whole thing is these courses, you mentioned they have a feel to them, which I think is so interesting. And not only in all of the courses that have the Pete Dye fingerprint, but then all of the influence, right? So, you know, the hundreds of courses that are Dye designs, you're right, the course list is extensive. And then all of the inspiration to other architects that have come off of these. And yes, we lost Pete Dye at age 94, but you know, his fingerprints, his legend will continue to live on because we're going to see these courses, these unbelievable courses for the next however many years. It's going to be amazing.
And there's so many courses. He's really the only architect I can think of where there are so many courses named the Dye Club, the Dye yeah. Preserve, the Dye Reserve. They're all Dye. They're all named after Dye. And it just, when you hear that, it definitely rings a tone in your mind and you say, wow, I need to play that. I'm not sure why, because I know it's going to beat me up, but I think I need to play it. And it just is a major attraction. So the world of golf will definitely miss Pete Dye. But I think I agree with you entirely. This is no doubt a celebration and it's a great opportunity to celebrate this great game.
Absolutely. All right. Now that's going to do it for the first cut, but I do want to get you on the record as we do here, Greg. We're two rounds down at the Sony. You've got to go on the record and make a pick. Now I will tell everyone in our one and done pool, the first cut one and done, you've got Sungjae. Okay.
I do.
You're live. Okay. You're only a couple shots back. Are you sticking with Sungjae or would you like to change your pick?
See, it's so funny you mentioned the one and done pool because I did pick Sungjae in the one and, in the one and done pool, but I also picked Webb Simpson to win and I'm also still alive with him. So I think I'm going to stick with my Webb Simpson pick. I do think Sungjae is going to have a great week. I think Webb, the reason I didn't pick Webb this week is I thought it was for a player like Webb. I thought it was a little too volatile, the conditions. I thought a Justin Thomas scenario could happen with Webb. And I think there are going to be a number of tournaments where I want to choose Webb. So I did think Webb was going to win this week, but I thought Sungjae would be right there. And that was the reasoning for my pick. But I'm going to go with Webb Simpson.
All right. I can't blame you for that. Now, I will tell you, I have Colin Morikawa in the one and done
yes.
pool. So as of right now, I'm feeling pretty good. I would like to, just for the nature of it, I'd like to stick with Colin Morikawa, considering I was so impressed with his rounds and one shot back. So he's certainly my 1A. I'm sticking with it. I think that he can absolutely win this thing. But my 1B, I would find it hilarious if Cameron Davis wins it. He would deserve it.
Yes.
And he is statistically in a really good spot. So one of those two in this packed
okay.
field, I would be very thrilled with.
And because of the computer, I'll let it slide that you're going to take a 1B, take an extra guy. I understand. I'll give you all
Thank
the credit
you.
Of the world if either of those two win.
I appreciate that. All right. That'll do it for another episode of The First Cut. If you've enjoyed this, do us a favor. Go give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. I thank you, Mr. Greg Ducharme. You can find
thank
him
you.
On Twitter. The Real GFD, I'm Rick Gaiman, which is at Rick Run Good on Twitter, and we will talk to you next time.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.